I'm here with Dr. Seymour Parter. My name is Joyce Coleman, and the date is April 15th, 2004, and we're going to continue the interview that we started 3 weeks ago. Now, Dr. Parter, I was wondering if you could tell me about some of your honors and awards.
The only one that would specifically be called an honor is that I'm a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. I don't remember what year it was conferred upon me, but it was. You get a letter in the mail saying you've been come to this meeting at the AAAS because we're going to make you a fellow, and I went. And if I were to go to more AAAS meetings, there's special banquets for the fellows and things like that. I guess I consider my having been elected president of the SIAM as an honor. I guess I consider having been elected the chair of the conference board of the mathematical sciences an honor, although they're not honors in the same sense as that sort of thing is. I guess that's all that falls in that category.
Oh, okay, thank you. Now I was wondering if there are some people in the computer science or math department that you'd like to talk about.
Well, before I do that, let me explain why I'm going to talk about some of these people. In 1957, yes, in the fall, the Russians sent up a Sputnik, and this country decided that it had to put a lot more money into education, and particularly into languages and the sciences, and in particular mathematics. One of the results of that was really a great enlargement of the departments in the sciences and in mathematics. The big enlargement in enrollment, of course, started with the GI Bill after World War II, but this spread the enrollment. People were encouraged to go into science, and later on I was to meet people who were rather bitter. They felt, well, I was told if I went into science I would make a decent living, etc., and that was a bad year when I graduated, etc. But in any case, that's what happened. And so, for example, I came here in the fall of 63. Now, I came here with tenure as a tenured associate professor, but the department had added a large number of assistant professors the year before, or 2 years before. And that first year I was here, we went on a binge of making promotions. And now that group is beginning to retire. The person that was chair of the department at that time was Creighton Buck. And I think Creighton should be mentioned and honored for his contributions to the math department at various stages and times. Certainly, I've already mentioned Steve Kleene, who should be honored and mentioned for his many contributions, including becoming dean and his functioning as a dean. I have to say, Steve is one of the most honest people I knew. I was chair of CS when Steve was dean, and I remember being in his office and talking one day, and he was muttering that he felt that being dean had sort of ended his scientific career. And I said, why? He said, well, I don't have really time to do a lot of studying of the literature. So if I get an idea and I do something and I write it up, then I have this great fear that it will get published, even though it might be secondary in terms of where things are. He says, after all, I'm Steve Kleene. The Journal of Symbolic Logic will publish anything I send them. and I'm not going to send them junk, and I'm not going to send them stuff that's been superseded, so I can't do anything anymore. Hmm. And to me, that was Steve's honesty. You know? Hmm. And other people that should be mentioned would be Walter Rudin and Mary Ellen Rudin. Walter was sort of, they're the parents of the department in a sense. They certainly had all the parties and they had people to their homes, to their home. And Walter was the senior analyst in the department, and everybody looked up to him. And how shall I say it? My favorite joke about Walter went like this, that Walter Rudin knew that my being in the same department with him wasn't going to hurt his reputation. I mean, he was very confident in himself and very sure of himself and very generous. I had lived in university houses, and I moved out to where my current home is, which is about 2 blocks from Walter's house. And as soon as I moved out and he knew we had only one car, Walter started showing up in the morning to drive me to work. You know, I mean, that was Walter. And he's now old and suffering from various illnesses, but he was a great man and a brilliant mathematician. And Mary Ellen is also a brilliant mathematician and one of the sanest, sensible people you'll ever meet in your life. And she's so certainly extremely active. In fact, it was interesting because she told me the other day, not the other month or two ago, that somehow she felt that maybe she had done her best work since retirement, which shocked me because she'd done so much that was really good before then. Those people should certainly be mentioned. In computer science, again, certainly the person that made computer science, computer science is a great department right now. It really is. I must admit, I don't know if you want this on tape or not, but if you look at the CS website, they sort of beat their own drum, and it always bugs me when you do that. But it's true, and the person who made that is Larry Landweber. There is absolutely no doubt about it. Larry has many faults. I won't tell you what they all are, but he certainly does. On the other hand, Larry made the department what it is. It was partly his timing. He was chair at the right time when people were available. As I've told you before, when I was chair, it was almost impossible to get people.
Mm-hmm.
People were getting degrees in CS, and he knew how to look for them and to get them. And has certainly continued, even past his retirement, to be a driving force within the department and working for the good of the department. And certainly he should be mentioned. I would say Dave DeWitt, hasn't done as much as Larry's done, but he certainly has made major contributions to the department, which should be recognized. One name which I've left out, and I realized it the other day after we left, was Ben Noble.
Hmm.
Ben Noble, and I think I left him out of my out of my history of the department as well. I have to go back and check that. Ben came about the same time I did.
Mm-hmm.
And as I think I've told you, I came in both math and computer science, but with not any official tie to the Math Research Center. Ben actually came with a tie to all three.
Mm-hmm.
He's an Englishman, trained as a classical applied mathematician, got interested in computing, and was involved in all three places. At one point, I think for a short period of time, he was chair of CS, but then he became the director of the Math Research Center and had to give up being chair of CS.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly had a big impact on the Math Research Center, both by his research and his direction while he was the chair. I guess John Noel is another name that should certainly be mentioned. John was a professor in the math department for a long time. There's actually a scholarship or fellowship in his name for worthy graduate students. I guess it's for the outstanding thesis in applied math or something. I'm not sure what it's for. And I guess it's funded by his family. He would be my age, but he died 5, 6, 7, maybe 10 years ago. He was also director of the Math Research Center for a while and certainly made many contributions in that area. I don't know what else to say. The math department, by the way, one thing which I should say is when I first came here, the math department was much smaller. The big expansion, as I say, occurred practically with my coming and with the years, a few years after that.
Mm-hmm.
And the math department had a colloquium every Friday and a party every Friday, and everybody went.
Wow.
Everybody. And now the department is much, much bigger. Not everybody goes to the colloquia, not everybody goes to the parties afterwards. In fact, not everybody's invited to the parties afterwards. They're usually for the subgroup where the speaker's coming from, etc. But in those early days, it was everybody met all the time, and it was a great feeling of friendship and a great feeling of avoiding fights. There were very, very few battles with it across divisions. And just the other day, I was talking to Dave DeWitt, and he commented on the fact that that was certainly currently true in CS. His 3-4 years, however long it's been that he's been chair, he has seen none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And and that's a very nice thing to have. There are departments, math departments across the country, where they have terrible, terrible battles. And so I guess those are the names that I would think of. There are certainly lots of other distinguished people and very nice people in the departments. I guess Well, it's almost impossible to think about the math department, at least for me, to not think about Dick Gaskey, who was a distinguished mathematician in a very classical area, a member of the National Academy of Sciences, and incredibly devoted to the questions of education at the grade school and high school level. I don't always agree with him on that subject, but I admire his devotion and his dedication. And of course there's Carl DeBoer, who again came when he came, and I'm not sure when he came, to both departments and the Math Research Center. And brilliant mathematician, brilliant computer person, and an extremely nice guy who's had a very positive effect. He was not a builder. He didn't build a large group around him. He didn't, you know, encourage a lot of hirings of other people in his area or anything like that, but he quietly contributed a great deal to the department, and he's alive and well in Washington State now. I guess that's all the people I would mention.
Okay. I was wondering if you might just talk a second about your retirement. When and why did you retire?
Ah. First of all, I'm not sure when.
You don't remember?
Well, I retired, I think, in 96.
Okay.
But at that time, it's now illegal, but at that time, you could make an arrangement. Usually it was for 5 years. I did it for 3 years, wherein you taught for one semester and had one semester off, even though you were retired. So for 3 years, I had a bonanza of, in addition to my retirement salary, a one semester salary. And I did that. It's really not a joke. I think I told you this before. My feeling was that here I was, I traveled all over the world, I went to various places, and I never saw anything. I went to the hotel where the conference was, or to the city where the conference was. And particularly if the conference was during the school year, I had to come back. I mean, it was legitimate and legal and permissible and even desirable from the university's point of view that I go off and attend a conference anywhere in the world I went, but couldn't take another week off and go sightseeing in the countryside or anything like that. And I decided that I wanted to do that. That was one of the considerations. That was a major consideration in my mind. Also, I think I was getting tired. I've often joked that there's a young lady who's, fortunately, I've forgotten her name, but I taught the last semester I taught of these 3 years that I had. I taught 713 in CS, which I always taught, and I taught the undergraduate probability course in the math department. And for some reason, just the way the timing came, I had arranged to have an exam in this probability class on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. On the Monday before, this young lady walked into my office and asked some very sensible questions, and we worked out the problems that she asked about. But she was, you know, she was hacking, she was sneezing, she was coughing, and I said, you know, you're sick. And she said, I know, I'm going off to the health service after I see you. And in about an hour, she called me and said, they told me to go home. Is that okay? I'm going to miss the exam. I said, yeah, you're sick, go home.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'll give you an exam on Monday. I figured, she's going home on Tuesday, nothing's going to happen. She's going on Monday afternoon, I'll give her the same exam on Monday when she came in. Well, she came in, she took the exam. And 3 of the 4 questions were questions right out of the book. The answers were in the back of the book. She botched the first one. She got the other 3 correct. One of them was particularly funny because there's a technique in statistics which I never bothered to teach because it affects the 4th decimal place of the probabilities, and I never considered that that serious.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the statisticians did, but I didn't. And so the answers in the book to this particular question were off in the 4th decimal place from that which I gave, because I didn't give this trick. And she got the answer correct, the 4 decimal places, as it was in the book. So I looked at it and laughed and said, "There, would you show me how you did that?" And there was some hemming and hawing. She said, "No, no. You know, I don't really remember. I did this, I did that." But you know, I went on to the next question, and I said, "Look, it's obvious to me, you know, someone told you what the questions were, and you've gotten the answers out of the back of the book. And let's forget it, because I don't really feel like going to the Dean of Students and making a big fuss. It's my last semester. And besides which, the exam, people did rather badly on it, so I'm going to give a makeup exam anyway."
Mm-hmm.
So she said, fine. Well, she didn't do that great on the makeup, but she did considerably better. I mean, as far as I was concerned, she'd gotten 0 on the first exam, and she got, oh, 65 or something like that on the makeup. And maybe 60. And then at the end of the semester, I gave her a C, which was what she deserved. And I got, I was fully retired, and I got an email from her saying, how come I got a C? These are my grades. And she listed a 75 for the second exam, which is to say the three questions. And I told her, no, you didn't. And so she gave me a big hassle about this, saying, no, 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 there were two exams, and I should have gotten the higher grade of the two of them, etc. And this went on and on. As I said, I was already retired. So at that point, I said, okay, we're going to the Dean of Students, even though the Dean of Students will probably wrap my knuckles for not doing it in the first place. And I sent the Dean of Students an email saying, Roger, I was a bad boy. I should have done this the first time, but will you back me up? And he said, absolutely. So I said, okay. I sent her an email saying, we're going to the Dean of Students if you really persist. And finally, she went away. But that, I was beginning to feel that sort of attitude among the students and my lack of tolerance for it. Maybe when I was much younger, I would have laughed at it. But I just didn't find it funny. And yeah. So I was getting tired. Mm-hmm. I think that's the main thing. I really was getting tired of that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I retired. And I don't know if I regret it. I mean, one of the things which happens with retirement, which is, look, I guess I was 14 years old when I first got started being interested in mathematics. And I was now 70. So I've been doing this sort of thing for a very long time. I've been doing research since I was 23, 24. And suddenly, the real motivation for it disappeared. It wasn't going to affect my salary. It really wasn't going to affect my reputation. I think I may have mentioned in an earlier tape my running joke about that, that all I could do at this point was hurt my reputation. I mean, if I wrote another paper which was pretty, if I wrote a brilliant paper, well, of course. But if I wrote another paper which was pretty good, people would say, yeah, that's what we expect of them. And if I wrote a bummer, they would say, aha. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the motivation and the drive slowly began to ebb away. And I don't know if I'll write another paper or not. I keep thinking I will. You know, the last paper I wrote was because I got interested in it for a reason that, you know, wasn't the most important problem in the world, but I got interested in it, and so I knocked it off. And it's just recently appeared, and I don't know if that's my last paper or not, but so that's the retirement. You know, it's very strange to have been doing something for so many years out of your life and thinking it was important, and suddenly, it's not that it's no longer important. Mathematics is still important to me. I sit in on classes in mathematics. I talk mathematics to people. In fact, the other day I went to the Karp lecture. I don't know if you were there or not.
No, I didn't go.
You should have gone. It was a great lecture. And one of my colleagues from the math department came in and said, I thought you'd quit. And I said, I've quit doing. I haven't quit learning. but you know, even that, quitting doing after you've been doing it for so long, is really kind of hard. And on the other hand, you know, my life is much more flexible now. I spend a lot of time in the gym at the Knapp. I spend a lot of time visiting with friends. I still sit in on courses. I go to conferences now and then. But it's a different kind of life. And I guess it's okay, but I'm not crazy about it. But on the other hand, that's it. Okay.
Have you had a chance to do some more traveling?
Well, professional traveling or just general traveling?
Well, any kind of traveling.
Well, the first thing we did when we retired was, first semester I had off, we went to Australia and New Zealand for 9 weeks. When we went to Australia, the first thing we did, well, we traveled around for the first week. Then we went to an Australian Math Society meeting. Mm-hmm. Then we visited the university for a week in Sydney, visited the university for a week in Canberra. Then we went to the Great Barrier Reef. And then we went to New Zealand, now in New Zealand for our four and a half weeks there. For 3.5 weeks, we just traveled around, and then I spent a week visiting the university in Auckland. So that was a mixture of the two of them. And we went to Germany a year ago. I gave a lecture in Berlin. I attended don't know if you know what Oberwolfach is.
Nope.
Besides being a mouthful, it's Oberwolfach is a city in Germany, let's see, southeast, I guess, southwest, close to Basel. Mm-hmm. So it's close to the both, and it's also close to, I forget the name of the city in France, near the Black Forest. And there's a estate there, which is owned by the German Mathematical Union. And each year, each week of the year, with the exception of the weeks when Christmas and New Year's come, so roughly 50 weeks out of the year, there's a different mathematical conference. Mm. And it's by invitation only. And you don't do anything. You eat, sleep, etc. with the same people all the time. And so, I guess 2 years ago, I went to Germany, I went to Berlin, gave a lecture there, and then went over to Oberwolfach and came home. I'm leaving Friday, Saturday, I'm leaving for Providence, where I'll spend a couple of days talking to some people at Brown University about mutual problems. So I'm not dead yet. Let's see, where else have I... Well, I, up until this year, I'd been, kept going to the Copper Mountain conferences. Actually, there's a... The reason I was stopped and knocked on the door downstairs was that the class I'm sitting in on, he did a rather tedious eigenvalue, eigenvector calculation. And the point was that the result was that this matrix, which was quite a mess, had four linearly independent eigenvectors. And I looked at it, and I have a hunch that it follows from a simple computation based on a theorem of mine. And I just thought I would, my ego said I should check that. So as I say, I'm not totally dead. What else? Yeah, and well, we travel a lot. You know, 2 years ago, a year ago, February, my wife and I spent a week in the Galapagos. And we just came back from 10 days in Belize, kayaking and snorkeling. And
wow.
We're traveling, we're doing we're doing what we wanted to do.
Sounds very nice.
It's all right. It's not. It could be worse.
Well, do you have any closing comments you'd like to make about your career at the university?
Well, first of all, the University of Wisconsin has been good to me, I must say. I've thrived here. I've done well. I don't know. It's very hard to say, you know, I did my best work here, or I did my best work before I came here. I did some things here that I'm very proud of. I did some things before I came here that I'm very proud of. It was always a nice atmosphere. I liked, I still like, the sense of faculty governance that we have here. It's an extremely democratic university. As you know, we vote on everything in every department. It's university rules. Sometimes that gets tedious. I frequently joke that if someone would put it on the agenda, we would spend 2 hours debating the color of the toilet paper in the Johns. But, but that's okay. I mean, we have democracy, and we talk about it. And it has disadvantages. Disadvantages at a university, for example, at Stanford, they don't have a chair of the department. They have a head. Mm-hmm. The head is chosen by the dean. The department has nothing to do with it. I don't know if you know this, but here the department votes, makes a recommendation to the dean, and heaven help the dean that suddenly decided to put somebody else in his chair. one of the results of that infinite democracy which we have is that, so you're chair, but you can't lead in any real way. You can't really provide scientific leadership. You administer, you do things, you can do a little bit of, you can twist arms, but you really can't say, you know what, you guys, we've been going in this direction all these years, and we ought to go off in that direction because that's the big new hot thing and we ought to do it, and I'm interested in it, and so let's go. You can't do that. I mean, there's too much inertia in the system, and the inertia is buttressed by the democracy. It wouldn't be easy to do if you didn't have the democracy. Mm-hmm. You'd have a revolt on your hands, and certainly I know of revolts at universities where they have heads as opposed to chairs, but you have no hope of trying to do it here. I mean, you can do it by talking to your friends and muttering under your breath to people, but it takes a lot more skill and tact to do it in this situation. If I have a criticism, at various times we try to create a program in applied mathematics which would be more interdisciplinary and got stymied by various forces. And it works both ways. I remember we were talking to the dean about this, and basically the dean looked at me and said, "You haven't been impeded, your career has worked. I mean, why do you need this new program?" And I tried to explain to him why I felt I needed it, but it's very hard to do that when indeed that argument holds up. But I can make the counter argument, but you don't want that on your tape at this point. That's over, 6 years ago. I retired over 6 years ago. And so, but it's been good, and it's a university I like, and the people I like in it. I like the democracy of it. Both departments have changed so much since I've retired that I can't really say I know what's going on in them. That's part of what gets lost. Part of what gets lost by having a joint appointment. You simply cannot be that involved in both departments. As much as you're interested in it, you try. But as the departments get bigger, it becomes harder and harder. There was a time when I thought I knew what everybody in the math department was doing. I was probably deceiving myself, but I thought I did know what everybody was doing. And it's out of the question now. And it isn't so much that it's larger, it's partly because the separate subgroups have gotten stronger, and being stronger, they've gotten more isolated. By and large, I like the university. That's all I can say.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.